The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 536. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, the hot weather has returned to central Ohio, and it's supposed to be in the mid to upper 90s all week long. So I mentioned this only because a couple weeks ago, we had another streak of hot weather. And while doing the show, I had specifically stated to my listeners that you'd have to overlook the sound of the air conditioner running because it's wicked hot outside. And so once again, I'm going to say hopefully that the running of my air conditioner does not interfere with your experience of listening to the show. You know what? Actually, I shouldn't even say anything because I did receive two comments from some listeners that said that they didn't even notice the sound of the air conditioner, and had I not mentioned anything, they wouldn't have even cared or known that it was there. So the bottom line is, I just want to be transparent and let you all know that my comfort is of prime importance for me when I'm podcasting. And so with that, let's talk about who is going to be a prime importance of a guest for this episode. And that is a gentleman by the name of Jonathan London, who has a comic out called Super Action Man. And Super Action Man is kind of a tip of the hat, if you will, to those old 1980s and 1990s shoot 'em up action films. Jonathan was a big fan of those movies and a big fan of G.I. Joe and all the other pop culture toys and whatnot that were out in the 80s and 90s. And we're going to talk about Super Action Man, the inspirations behind them, how he weaved into the tale some pop culture references. We're going to talk about the Kickstarter. Has about 24 or 25 days left in the campaign. We're going to talk all about the flat out fun of the comic. He also has another comic that we're going to talk about. He is the creator of Paul London's Hero of the Prophecy. And yes, if you are asking yourself, John, Paul London, is that the same Paul London that was a WWE World Tag Team Champion and Cruiserweight Champion? Yes, it is. Jonathan is the older brother to Paul. And so we talk a little bit about this love letter to his brother. It's a fantasy project, a fantasy comic, and we'll even fit in some other chit-chat about G.I. Joe and some other things as well. So with that being said, I'm going to throw it to a quick break here right after I thank a couple of folks, a couple of the great sponsors of this show. The first sponsor is the newest sponsor. It's Courtney 614 Deals. If you need great deals on a bevy of different particular products, you need to check out Courtney 614 Deals. You can find her on all those major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc., etc. Simply go over to Instagram to Courtney 614, and that's spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, and there you can find out where her products are in terms of those reselling sites, how much they cost, etc., etc. And if you do pick up any fabulous deals, how about you let her know that you heard about her endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. And then we also have the old school sponsor, that being World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era, the golden, silver, bronze, and modern eras. They also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. You name it, they got it for your comic book fandom. So, if you're in the Central Ohio area, as I mentioned, they're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also follow them online. WGComics.com is their web address. And are pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Jonathan London. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this afternoon on this episode of the PVD Cast is a writer, a comic book creator, a man about town, maybe even. I'm not sure on that last one, but nonetheless, please welcome to the show, Jonathan London. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm good, man. It really depends on the town, I think. like how small is this town? If the town has three people in it, yeah, I could go with that.
Okay. All right. Well, I thought it was fitting since you're kind of out of your neck of the woods, right? You're kind of in another location than you normally are, correct?
Yeah, I'm on assignment out here in the undisclosed classified area. I'm kidding. That would be super action, man. Me myself? No, I'm just in New Mexico visiting my parents, my mom. And the Wi-Fi is not so good, so I sound like I'm coming in from the moon, probably.
Oh, you sound okay. You sound all right.
Good.
Well, we mentioned, and you mentioned it as well, the title of your new project is called Super Action Man. And I was wondering if you could give us a little summary without spoiling it.
Yeah, Super Action Man is just a high-octane G.I. Joe-style team book based around a character named Super Action Man, or Sam for short, and he takes inspiration from, I don't know if anybody remembers, but back at Blockbuster, they didn't just have an action section that had the traditional Hollywood stuff like The Rock. There was a secondary section that had a bit more of like a mullet percentage to it. It had like the Lorenzo Lamas, Mark Dudikoff type movies. A movie like Gymkhana would have been in the super action section, right? And when I worked at Blockbuster, I remember being obsessed with the super action section. And the action section was great, but like everybody knew about those action movies, right? Everybody went and saw those in the theaters. But if you really wanted to mainline an explosion, having an explosion inside of an explosion, it'd be a lot of slow-mo, then you're going to go to the super action section, right? That had like the stuff from Hong Kong and had like all the slow-mo double barrel, you know, stuff. And so I always found myself in the super action section, and Sam is a byproduct of that kind of energy. It's moronic and loud.
But it also has some heart to it, because you explain in the back of the book the reason why you decided to create this character Sam and that universe that he lives in. Can you share that with the listeners as to why you felt important, or why you felt it was important, excuse me, to explain yourself, so to speak?
I'm a pretty big patriot. I love the United States of America. I love everything that it was founded on, the ideals, but those aren't really the reality. And I think that America is, to me, fascinating because we are in a constant struggle against the reality of this country versus the idealism of the country. And if we could all just be a bunch of sloganism, which Sam as a character is, then I think we would be all right. But we have to deal with the reality that people from all sorts of places have turned America into this really great country. And we're great because of our diversity. So the Super Action Team is a diverse team. It is a team made up of different types of Americans in it. And I always thought about that with G.I. Joe. Like, G.I. Joe's a pretty diverse team. They all really get along. And that doesn't feel realistic to me, especially knowing the history of the United States. So would G.I. Joe really get along? Would they really be, you know, chummy, you know, working together to vanquish Cobra? I'm not so sure. If you've been reading the news and the history of the United States that we would get along, because we don't get along. And for all the amazing things that this country has accomplished and can accomplish when we are unified, positive, and following the ideals it was founded on, that's not always the case. So I wanted a team that was about that, but also didn't dwell on it, right? Like, it shouldn't be a partisan book. It shouldn't be a book that lectures you. It should be a book that says, hey, like, there's something positive that this is all about, and let's stick to that and let's work together. Even though half the team hates the other team, doesn't agree with the other team. Let's go, doesn't agree. You know, it doesn't agree.
I used to, just as a side note, since you've talked about G.I. Joe, and as a kid growing up, I love G.I. Joe. As a kid growing up, I kind of didn't like the cartoon because to me, it wasn't realistic. Like, everybody parachuted out of their Cobra Rattler before it exploded, and nobody ever got hurt. Nobody ever got killed. Nobody ever had relationships. And like, the comic book written by Larry Hama had that stuff in it. It had intrigue into it and that. And so as a kid, I always gravitated more to the comic book than the cartoon.
Yeah. And Larry Hama is like one of the only creators that I've been too nervous to go up and approach. I definitely want to give him a copy of Sam, but he's definitely someone who I've seen at Comic-Con and doing signings or just at parties and stuff. And you know, it's Larry Hama. He wears a Snake Eyes emblem on his jacket, but I just don't approach him. I mean, what am I going to tell him? Like, yes, I'm a big fan. Who isn't a big fan? I want to be able to give him a copy of Super Action Man and say, hey, this and that comic inspired me. I mean, but I also love the cartoon, and I can't wait to give a buddy of mine, Larry Houston, who's a producer on the G.I. Joe the movie, can't wait to give him a copy of the book in a week at Comic-Con. I think Larry directed one of the best animated sequences of all time, which is the intro to G.I. Joe the movie, where they're fighting around the Statue of Liberty. Like, that intro is so freaking epic that I think of it as the perfect example of what the G.I. Joe cartoon could be. It's just so resource intensive that that'd be impossible. I like the cartoon. I grew up on the cartoon, obviously the action figures, but I'm with you on the realism. I mean, they're shooting lasers at each other and there's shell casings coming out of the guns. Like, what were in those shell casings? what is this? Like discharging batteries at each other. Like, it doesn't make sense. If anything, I really like the Skybound stuff Joshua Williamson's doing right now. The Robert Kirkman, Joshua Williamson stuff at Skybound is awesome because you realize that they're energon weapons. And tying the Transformers universe and G.I. Joe universe and the Mask universe and the whole Hasbro universe together is something that should have been done 20, 30 years ago. And it's cool now that the G.I. Joe and Cobra fight is a fight over energon technology, you know, this otherworldly technology that came from that the Cybertronians were also after. So now they're all embroiled in this battle and they've got their own vehicles, but there's a couple of those vehicles transform into giant robots. I think it's cool. And it explains why they're discharging lasers at each other. The shell casings threw me for a loopy when I was a kid. It's like, wait, what? You know, that's how it is. I hope there's some of that in Sam. I mean, I hope it's over the top. I hope it's fun. I hope people see it and, again, feel patriotic but not partisan. You know, there's clearly a MAGA dude on the team. He's the pilot, but he's the best pilot there is, so you can put him on the team. There's a bit of a BLM character on the team, but, you know, he's a retired athlete brought in to kick some ass. And, they got to work together. They got to figure this out. That's what our country is, you know. Love it or leave it.
Well, I feel that Sam is a fun trip down memory lane, but also awesome action mixed in there. You got everything covered, Jonathan, when it comes to an action adventure book.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. I tried it as a single story years ago, and we did a 12-page issue, a story inside of a flip book with another 12-page story that I did. And there are not a lot of those swimming around anymore. We only printed 100 of them. And I still see them every now and then show up on like Amazon or eBay. And I love that book, but Sam is incredibly hyper-violent in that comic. And it's guns and it's all this stuff. And I just didn't feel comfortable doing that today. Not that I've softened, but I wanted to make a book that was a lot more aspirational than a book that was a lot of a war on terror kind of result, where it was blam, 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 and like heads exploding and like crazy violence. I want to make an all-age book that will serve somebody you and I's age, along with somebody who may be younger. They read it, and spoiler, like nobody's really using guns in the book. They're using drills. They're using cool weapons like darts and throwing stars and action stuff. But, you know, my politics aside, I think that a lot of those movies and a lot of those comics tend to turn into guns. And it's like, no, there's a lot of ways to kick somebody's ass in a creative way. Like, what if you fight them with a cool drill or like a hook on the end of a chain or something crazy, like you roll over them in a giant ball? You know, like one of the coolest movies ever is Master of the Flying Guillotine. That obviously lent itself, like the people who made Street Fighter took so much from Master of the Flying Guillotine. You know, what if that movie was just guns? No, thanks, man. It's literally a dude with a collapsible bird nest guillotine with razors around it on a chain, chucking it on people's heads and pulling their heads off. It's crazy. Way better. Way better than Pew Pew Pew.
I'm going to mention a couple of the pop culture references that I found that gave me a chuckle. Okay.
Sure, let's see if they're even intentional.
Okay. Okay. Of course, a staple of me. I think I was in middle school when this first was on the air. National Gladiators.
Yeah, American Gladiators was big for my brothers and I, and that character Razorblade is one that I made in college on the radio, and we were in college radio, and nobody would be on our radio show. Like, we could only get our friends to be on our radio shows because people are like, dude, college radio is nerdy. I don't want to be on college radio. It's like being on the college TV station. Like, it's never produced well. It's always kind of embarrassing, right? But you want to do it so you can get experience in broadcasting. And I wanted to do what we're doing now with Geekscape is podcasting. It was before podcasting, and I wanted to do broadcasting. And so I definitely wanted to do radio, and my heroes were people like Greg Kinnear and David Letterman and people who had started in broadcast and comedy. And Razorblade was a character that we did because we could be like, hey, look, and you know, we made up a fictitious gladiator, and we're like, he's here in the studio talking to you about the dangers of drug abuse, right? And he's kids in there start screaming at people because he's really angry that he's an ex-gladiator who had the championship and rolled around in a ball and then lost it and still swears that he was cheated. My younger brother, Paul, is a pro wrestler. He was in WWE for a while. So there's a lot of that in that character too, where it's like, you cheated me out of my title. I would have been a champion if it wasn't for you. You know, and it's like you grown ass men in tights with these made up storylines. So that Razorblade is that character. And it's cool because he's the oldest character in the book. And I love American Gladiators. Yeah. National Gladiators. Yeah.
As a wrestling nerd, I love the Parts Unknown reference. That was very nicely done. And I don't know how to explain it to the general audience that may not know what Parts Unknown is. It's a fictitious town where wrestlers come from. How about that? Is that a good enough definition there?
Yeah. Jonathan? It's a catch-all for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to say laser writing. I'm just going to say catch-all.
West Philadelphia representing. Is that a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reference?
No, it's where I went to school. And that's where the character originated. Yeah, I went to school in West Philly. And so when I got on the radio, that's where Razorblade originated, because I was you know, talking about locals and the local characters and making it feel local. I'll say local five more times, but that's what the West Philly thing is. And yeah, it's not a Fresh Prince reference beyond the fact that West Philly sometimes is a rough neighborhood, North Philly is a rough neighborhood, and Razorblade definitely had to, as an athlete, had to come out of a rough neighborhood, because, you know, that proves his mettle, and mm-hmm. definitely that he earns his place on the team in this issue.
So you have a Kickstarter that is still going on. I believe there's about 25 more days left. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, we're at the front of it. So superactionman.com, that's where you do the Kickstarter. How do you like, did you watch the Kickstarter trailer? Did you enjoy that one?
The trailer was fantastic. And I have written down, like, how did you come to create that that video? Like, who sat down and said, we need a video, we need Action Man to be live action?
Super Action Man's been live action from the beginning. Like,
oh, okay.
Before he was a comic book character, Super Action Man would make appearances at Comic-Con in little videos on Geekscape, kind of walking around interviewing people at Comic-Con. He might be at Comic-Con next week even. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a while. But maybe he'll be at Comic-Con next week, going around with a microphone and a camera interviewing people. And he needs to keep his distance. Like, back in the day, he used to go and, like, give people hugs and stuff. But I think he might get charges pressed if he tries that in today's climate. So who knows? I would keep an eye out. If you're at Comic-Con, definitely look for Super Action Man. I don't want to put him on blast, but I would hazard a guess he's going to be there walking around and promoting the comic. I've asked him to, you know, it'd be the right thing to do, Sam. Getting him to do the trailer, damn, I don't know. There's a tier, one of our stretch goals, our biggest stretch goal is an entire Super Action Man short film. But no, we've been filming those things since before Geekscape, just a star-spangled Speedo running around, making it weird. You know, there's throughout the campaign, there'll be more Sam videos. So they'll be on superactionman.com. So, like, we got a couple of videos that are being edited right now. And for sure, there'll be some filmed at Comic-Con if Sam shows up, which he will, walking the floor, interviewing people, strutting his stuff, and letting people know that the most American thing he can do right now is pick up his comic.
Well, I liked in the video where you claim, or excuse me, where it's claimed that Rambo, Iron Eagle, and a few other movies are documentaries. I thought that was very funny. I enjoyed that. That's a very nice clip.
Sam, you know, he was involved in some of those events. To him, they're real. To us, we've only gotten the Hollywood version of them, but for Sam, I mean, he may have been in some of those situations. So to him, that's just the way it went down. He's like so, the Ken Burns of the Super Action. Yep, that's the way Gymkhana happened.
So are there any other perks or stretch goals that you have besides the short films?
What I like is the one where you put yourself on the team. We've already sold one of those. I think there's one left. But for the next Super Action Man comic, more one down the line, I think the next book, I'll put you in the next book, but you'll get your own Super Action character. So if you ever wanted to be a G.I. Joe kind of character, you know, we've had a lot of success with Hero of the Prophecy in writing people into the comic, because I love seeing my friends and the backers in the comic. I think it's fun, and I don't just do this thing where I draw you into the background. I don't draw at all, but the artist. I love doing the thing where you actually have a role in the comic. The one thing that always cheeses me is when somebody buys a $200+ tier to be in a comic book, and they're in like a crowd shot. It's like, okay, the only similarity I have with that dude in the green shirt is that I have black hair. Like, I'm not really in the comic. But people who've donated to Hear the Prophecy, like, I've made actual characters from the script, just made them characters in the script, and I've written little storylines around them. They see themselves in the bar sequence, the tavern sequence, or they see themselves in an action sequence with the Cyclops. And issue 3, which is totally drawn already, it's not out, but it's completely drawn. Like, issue 3 has a couple people who paid to be in the tier, and they're in several pages, and they're in battle scenes. You know, I just don't like paying or asking your backers for a couple $100, and then you put them in a background shot of one panel, and mm-hmm. it just feels very disingenuous. If someone's going to help me finance my book, they're in the book. And so if you pay for the drawn in tier, you're going to be in a couple panels of the book. You're going to get some light. You're going to have a part of the plot. If you do the tier where you are actually on the super action team, you're on the team, dude. We're going to create a character for you. It's going to look like you. You're going to have your specialty. Maybe it's communications. Maybe it's explosives. Maybe you're the dude who, you know, like whatever your specialty is going to be on the team. You're going to have, and the plot is going to have a major part for you. Like you're a team member. There's only a handful of them. And I think that's really cool because I know who bought the first one and my mind is already racing about where I can put them on the team because I have so many of the stories already outlined and I've had them for a long time. And I know what story I want to do next. They're going to be in the entire freaking book. And it's fun. It's super cool. They're in the comic. They're not in some background shot in a single panel. I'm not doing that. It hurts my soul to see people pay for that. If people like that, not to shame other creators, like, you know, but I love populating my book with my friends and the people who support me.
And you still have some time to support Jonathan. Again, stated just a few moments ago that it's the 25th, 26th, 25 days left to go, excuse me, for Let's Roll, which is on Kickstarter. Jonathan, probably the best place to go is, as you said, superactionman.com or the Kickstarter page itself.
Yeah, that's the best place to do it. And then once the Kickstarter is over and we give it a few months of selling the book, I think that we have to repurpose the page to support whatever comes next for Super Action Man, which is probably like short films. I'd love to do more comics. But that's a character that I've had for over two decades. I mean, I've had Razorblade for over almost 30 years. And it's just time to do things with these characters. America is a country that I'm obsessed with and I'm conflicted by on a daily basis, but it's also a country I have a lot of hope in. And as dire as things seem when you turn on the news and as divided as things seem when you turn on the news and you look, you know, see what's going on in the country, I wouldn't make this book if it wasn't aspirational. I wouldn't tell the story if it wasn't hopeful. It's important to keep the American dream going because of what it was founded on is actually really important. And the experiment that is the American form of democracy is a crucial experiment in the advancement of mankind on this planet and us getting along. And it has been adopted by a lot of countries around the world, sometimes more successfully. but I think it's all an advancement of who we are, you know, and America played a huge role in it, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm proud American, you know, and that doesn't mean that I have to go sloganism and start slapping ridiculous stuff on my hats and my shirts and my truck.
Well, let's talk about a couple more topics here real quick before we wrap things up. You've mentioned Geekscape many times. Let's let the folks know, what does your company do? What was the origin of Geekscape, et cetera?
It was just a podcast. And then some of the podcast listeners wanted to do podcasting on their own, probably because they thought I was doing a terrible job. But that being said, we had a community by that point based around the single podcast, Geekscape. And that became the flagship show while these other podcasts created by our community around us started sprouting off. Like, I'm about a mile wide and an inch deep on any of these pop culture topics. Like, I love everything, but I just am not the most in-depth on all of them, right? Like, I can't name all the G.I. Joes, but I love G.I. Joe. Not strong on things like Harry Potter, not a big magic card, Magic the Gathering card player, not into competitive gaming in that sense. Even though my brother was a pro wrestler in WWE, not a wrestling fan, but a lot of the listeners were. So we now have shows that focus on wrestling. We have shows that focus on horror films. We have shows that focus on filmmaking, comic book movies, things that can be taken a lot deeper than I'm able to. And I love that. I mean, I'm probably not one of the top 10 ranked shows on the network anymore. And it's the network with the show's name on it, you know, but like, I think the Christmas show does better than my show. There's people who listen to a Christmas show 365 days a year. So we made a show called Christmas 365 for the Christmas fans in July. We have a Weird Al Yankovic show that goes through his entire discography, one song at a time. You know, this stuff is for the hardcore, mainlining, passionate pop culture fans. And I couldn't sustain it alone with the single podcast Geekscape, even though I touch on all those topics. So it is cool to have a podcast network with 40 shows or so that scratch a lot of different people's itch, because it's all one big community on a macro level. But now we can satisfy a lot of those interests on a micro level too with each episode, with each show. That's what Geekscape is. And now we produce films, we produce comics, but that comes out of like my interest in films and comics and stuff too. Did that over answer your question?
There we go. Jonathan, you there?
Yeah, did you catch all that?
I caught all of that.
Okay, cool.
It came fine. It's good. It's good. I don't know what happened.
It's all good. I just couldn't hear you.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. We're good.
But if you have all that, we can slide to the next one.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah,
sorry, you have to edit, man. I hate editing. I freaking
No. That's okay. It was my fault because I had muted my mic for a moment to take a drink and did not unmute. So that was
Listen, keep this, because I just want you to know that I appreciate you not burping in my ear.
Okay. That would have been
pretty gross to hear you smacking them lips in my ear. I'm playing.
I'm going to interrupt this conversation with Jonathan for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, comic book supplies, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, you name it, they got you covered for your fandom. So, you need to check out the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, or you can follow them online. WGComics.com is their web address. And you can also follow them on Facebook. Just look for @WGComics. Okay, I have to address it because I know there's probably some listeners out there that are pulling their hair out saying, John, his brother is Paul London. So I guess I have to ask, what's it like to have a WWE superstar in the family?
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, I'm super proud of my brother. He had a goal. And he went after it, and he accomplished it in a lot of ways. I think that it was, at least at the WWE stage, it was short-lived, because that just wasn't the era that was conducive to his ability to wrestle. Like, Paul is a very respected cruiserweight, and he was then, and he very much was on the indie circuit, and still is. A lot of people, I mean, you have people like Randy Orton talking about Paul London today, and a lot of wrestlers, you know, really respect Paul, and the biggest wrestlers respect Paul. But where WWE was in the window of time that Paul was working for them, they were not focused on the product that he was the best at, which was that cruiserweight, high-flying, high-octane style. That stuff became popular later when tag teams like the New Day and stuff like that became really popular. Again, wrestling's not, I mean, I'm, you know, as an older brother, I'm kind of bitter. I'm kind of pissed that they couldn't realize that they had a freaking Ferrari in the garage the entire time, and they just didn't take it for the drives they should have. Like, they didn't. I don't think that they used the talented cruiserweights that they had on the roster to the maximum ability that they could. They started to do that stuff later, but Paul was at that time, I think, just on another level with a lot of those guys. You know, I loved watching him fight guys like Chavo Guerrero. I think Brian Kendrick is amazing. I think they had so many great cruiserweights. And just narratively, commercially, had to figure out where to put them. And I think that came later in WWE, but he's kind of in an era that wasn't really conducive to what he could do. I'm super proud, though. Like, he wanted to become a pro wrestler. He became a pro wrestler. He still has that dog in him. He still loves the art form of choreographing a fight that looks real, that sells properly. He still trains wrestlers to take the hits. He made a lot of people look great. People loved working with Paul and love working with Paul because he puts them over better than almost anybody in the business. If you want to look like the injury is real, if you want to look like a guy really got hit in the face, if you want the sell to happen, Paul could train you to do that, and Paul's really good at doing it himself. So I love seeing his matches. You know, he's got one that I found the other day that I didn't even know existed, where it's him and John Cena, and they're overdoing it. They're really having fun with each other as friends, and they're overselling everything, and they got chewed out for it. But when I watch it and I see two friends having fun as wrestlers, kind of overselling things, putting a little bit of goofball into it. It feels a bit like a Looney Tunes wrestling match. I can totally understand why WWE was pissed that they did that match. But I love it because his friends having fun. It's just not the kind of product that they wanted to do coming out of something like the Attitude Era, right? Where things had to be a little more serious and a little bit more street fight. You know, having these people celebrate the fun of it. I could, you know, it just, it, I think the less UFC, the better with my WWE. You know, if you want to see a fight, see a fight. But with, you know, wrestling, I think the loud comic book nature of it is what I love about it and what Paul is really good at. And he adds the realism to it. Yeah, I'm super proud of my brother. Of course I am. I wrote a comic book to celebrate him and as a love letter to him, where he gets his ass beat the entire comic.
So I'm going to interrupt for a minute.
My parents were like, has he read this? Does he know how hard you're going on him? And I said, yes, he reads every issue. He helps me write some of the wrestling dialogue. Yes, he's read it. You got to bring the dude down to bring him up at the end. He has to become the hero. He's not a hero on the first page. Where are you going to go with that, right?
I was going to ask you about that because I have written down here, it seems that you were a little bit hard on your brother.
No. I was hard on the character. Yeah. And in Paul and I laugh, but like that's the character, is the dude who actually doesn't know how to do shit. You know, I mean, it is Ash Williams from Evil Dead. It is Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China. Like, those are the comics we like, and those are the movies we like. So when I read a wrestling comic, no offense to people doing wrestling comics, but maybe they'll take offense regardless. Like, it is a lot of what you get already on TV. It is a narrative from TV or a narrative from the real world with a wrestling twist. You know, it's got wrestlers in it. I can watch that on TV. Like, you guys have done a great job of it on TV. The worst place I'm probably going to want to watch wrestling is in a flat panel page. You know, as much as I love comic book art passionately, don't really want to look for my wrestling in a comic book. But if it's a fantasy book, if it has pieces of the stuff I love, like ElfQuest and fantasy books, or storylines like Galaxy Quest, or the Three Beagles, where it's the wrong people, mistaken identity, put into a place where they can't really succeed, and, you know, a bit of a death trap, like Army of Darkness. That's what I'm looking for in a comic book, is somebody becoming a hero, not coming in with some wrestling attitude like he's a badass, somebody who's a complete fish out of water and has to learn to swim. That's what I love about Hear the Prophecy, and what my brother and I love about Hear the Prophecy. It makes us laugh watching this, you know, watching him get thrown around panel to panel, and he's going to have to figure it out. You know, that's the cool thing about the story. We've seen it before, right? I listed all of them that were influences to me. And that's what I hope people get excited about, is be like, man, he really sucks. How's he going to figure this out? He will not suck forever. And I tell Paul too, I said, hey man, you actually do something in the next issue. You know, you get your ass kicked right after it, but you do have a moment in the next issue where you get to play hero and you start to turn a corner towards who you become, right? Who you're supposed to become. That's the design, at least.
Well, where can folks pick up a copy of Hero of the Prophecy? Are they available on your website? Or are they available through Amazon, whatnot?
The great thing about it is that they're both add-ons. And yes, we will make them a landing page so you can buy them. It is a six-issue series, of which we have two published, and the third one is almost done. It's drawn and it's ready to be lettered in. Order Super Extra Man as the Kickstarter. You can add both issues of Hear the Prophecy 1 and 2 as add-ons in the Kickstarter. Or you can find me at Comic-Con, or send me an email at jonathan@geekscape.net. Just email me. We'll figure out a way to send you one.
Okay, is there any social media outlets you would like to plug real quick for yourself or the projects?
Man, I would go to geekscape.net and start checking out different kinds of podcasts if that's what you're about. If you're not into podcasts, you can follow me on Instagram at geekscape.net. Just search Geekscape. You'll see Jonathan Lennon pop up. I think I'm on Threads. There's a Facebook group for us old heads who love Facebook. You can find Geekscape and myself on Facebook. And that's kind of the social media stuff there. We're constantly coming out with new podcasts. We're constantly coming out with the next comics. There's all sorts of stuff we're doing at San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay, last question. We talked a lot about G.I. Joe. Who is your favorite G.I. Joe character?
It's got to be Roadblock, dude. It's been Roadblock since the beginning. Big dude, but also sensitive. When you read Superbatch Man, there's a lot of Roadblock in the character Razorblade. It's both going to be shortened down to RB. And I love that he rhymes in the cartoon. He puts a couple rhymes in his dialogue. That's my dude.
All right. Well, Jonathan, with that, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sitting down and chatting with me.
Dude, thanks, and sorry about all the technical difficulties.
All right. Well, no problem with that. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Jonathan London talking about Super Action Man and, of course, Paul London's Hero of the Prophecy. I got to just say it again. I know I complimented Jonathan in the conversation that we had, but I'm going to do it one more time because I just want everybody, especially if you were a kid of the 80s, all right, and you grew up with the A-Team and G.I. Joe and superhero comics and whatnot, then this Super Action Man comic is just waiting for you to pick up a copy, and you should definitely do that. Keep tabs on Jonathan and all of his projects through his social media and through his website and whatnot. And I'd like to just thank Jonathan one more time for sitting down and chatting with me. I really do appreciate it. All right, let's wrap some things up here. Like, for an example, maybe you want to let me know what you thought about this episode, or any episode for that matter. Well, there's a couple different ways you can get in touch with me. First of all, you can leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and the Threads. At PVDcast is the handle there. I am still on Twitter, at PVDMVP, which is my personal Twitter account. And you can always shoot me an email if you want to be old school. JohnOrlando at PVDcast.com is the email address. Or maybe you want to let some folks know about where they can hear the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get all of the new episodes of the show. But of course, it's available through all of those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite outlet or app, go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And if you are listening through one of those outlets or apps, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm, and it lets those apps and outlets know that you're listening. And hey, you know what else you can do while you're perusing that outlet or app? You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. But there's one final way that you can hear each week's episode, and that is through a live broadcast that I do every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, I just made that change. It will help me out with scheduling guests, so that it used to be 8 p.m. It is now 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the live broadcast through the Facebook page. And once again, that's at PVDcast. So there you have it, three easy ways to get your fill of the show. That's either through PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, through the Facebook Live broadcast Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode. and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.